The warning labels that you have on the gas pumps kind of seem like a piece of performance art. And you've also had the warning labels in an art exhibit. Do you think art is a big inspiration behind this project?
Yeah, I think so. And it reminds me of an image that I saw when I was quite young. I think it was age 10. A teacher showed me, it was a drawing of a dead fish. So it had the two X's on its eyes, right? And it was floating in this sort of greenish, funky looking water. And so I thought, oh, so it's the water that must have killed this fish. But you then follow these raindrops that are leading into the water that look kind of funky. They're coming from these strange looking clouds. You know, the clouds then you follow to these smokestacks of some factory. And so you think, oh, it's the smokestacks that did this, right? But then that's connected to this factory. And on the other side of that are some widgets that are being sort of popped out on this conveyor belt. And then at the end of that are a bunch of people, consumers, consuming these things, right? And so I think at an early age, I understood all in that one image, it was a drawing that, yeah, we are actually connected to that dead fish and we sort of share in responsibility for that. So this project is, it's kind of that, but it's, you know, related to climate change and it's that image exactly where you need to see it right at the point of purchase.
Do you think people have trouble grasping the idea of climate change?
I think so. And that's something that this approach tries to remedy, tries to address. Climate change can be very abstract. A lot of the effects are sort of far away, either geographically or temporally. And so we don't really think about it in our day-to-day living. And so what this label then attempts to do is it helps us to connect the dots, help us to understand that this is a human problem. We're all a part of this. And so say, for example, we might have a label that describes famine and uses an image to convey that concept, or say loss of species. And if you were to see that right at the pump and understand, okay, it's our use of fossil fuels that contributes to this, I think that would move us to a place where we would then first recognize the problem, recognize that we're a part of it, and then have this desire to, okay, let's move toward meaningful solutions.
So what kind of success have you seen with the project so far?
A lot of communities in southern Ontario are starting to contact us about this project. So councillors, legal departments, managers that sort of deal with sustainability issues. I presented just last Friday, I guess, in the regional municipality of Durham. And I've been lobbying a lot of city councillors here in Toronto on this, and it could very well be June 27th that the Licensing and Standards Committee is going to be debating this. So that would be the first step is for a staff report. And so for any listeners that want to come and speak, you're actually welcome to do a deputation, just a quick presentation at City Hall on June 27th. But a community in BC actually already took a vote on this and it failed. It was 4-3. So it could have already have happened. And the good news is the mayor there, she voted for it, and she said, you know, this is just round one. Sometimes these things take a few goes. So that one person, had they, you know, changed their mind, it would have already created this global precedent. So yeah, it's just a matter of when, I think. It will happen.
So who brought that forward to the community in BC?
It was just a citizen, just a community member that heard about our project. I think we did some radio interviews out west too, so it could have been through that. But this is sort of my hope. We're wanting to put the idea out there, but then let citizens run with it. So if you think the concept is good, and if you'd like to see this happen in your community, go advocate for it. Talk to your counselors. Yeah, and you could go through our website at www.ourhorizon.org. where you can send a form letter to your counselors, and quite soon we'll have resources up on sort of frequent objections and how you might respond to them. So citizens are starting to pick up for it and advocate for it.
So you've also been encouraging people to submit their own warning labels for the gas pumps. Someone wants to do that, how should they contact you?
You can tweet it at us. So our Twitter account is at ourhorizon.org, or through our website, which is ourhorizon.org. And we have contact info available there. But we've even been doing workshops at schools where students actually are asked to create their own warning labels. And a lot of students quite enjoy the activity because a lot of youth now understand this idea and are frustrated and saddened, you know, by the lack of action from government and business on it.
Are they teaching that in school right now?
They are, actually are. They're now teaching climate change. And it's more and more students are sort of aware of it, right? And so then the first thing is awareness and, okay, here's this problem, but then what can we do? So students are finding it interesting when we come with our workshops. I say, I'm actually going to take these labels that you created to counselors. And the reality is we have these nice professionally designed labels, but I think a children's drawing is a lot more compelling than anything we can create. And the second step is when students learn how accessible municipal governments are, and all you have to do is send an email to the clerk and say, I would like to speak to this. We've already had a lot of students that have committed to doing deputations at City Hall. So I think if we pack the room with youth that are effectively speaking for their future, I think this will pass.
969 Radio Humber, I'm Kevin Sexton, and I'm speaking with Rob Shirky, the executive director of the climate change NGO Our Horizon. We're talking about making a change by putting warning labels on gas pumps about the effects of climate change. Rob, you talk about a lot about working locally. Why is that?
I think there's actually a little bit of maybe cynicism that informs that approach. I've kind of almost written off senior levels of government. So federally, the current party, I don't see them acting too much on climate change. And even some of the other parties in the spectrum, say center and left, we're running out of time on this issue. We really are, and we need to act now and fast and in real, deep, meaningful ways. And I don't know that any of the main parties are offering that. And provincially, you do see some provinces that are moving on this, and here in Ontario with the Green Energy Act, kudos to our provincial government. But I don't think we're moving fast enough. And I think there are a variety of interests at play at that level of government that sort of fetter decision-making, right? Whereas at the municipal level, it's sort of an entirely different ball game. I think there's more room to innovate at that level of government. And I do see this sort of a bottom-up approach. And there are a few instances in sort of Canada's legislative history where you see a community that just breaks the mold, creates a bylaw that's, you know, unprecedented in all of Canada, and then it spreads. Neighboring communities pick up on it. Eventually, even the province might step in and create a uniform regime. So,
can you give us an example of that from history?
Yeah, a great example actually is the pesticides ban, cosmetic use of pesticides on your lawn. That was started in 1991 in the town of Hudson, Quebec, so a community of 5,000 people, and three councillors, brave councillors, you know, against significant industry interest, voted for that, and in doing so created this precedent in all of Canada. It spread, and now something like 80% of Canadians live in a jurisdiction where there's either a municipal bylaw or a provincial law that can be traced back to the decision of those three human beings. And I think to myself, everything has an origin, you know? Even, say, the labels on cigarette packages started with a vote, right? And just a handful of people. So I see this eventually actually spreading and going global, and it'll be a community in Canada that gets to one day say, hey, we started that, we did that. So it's kind of exciting.
I want to ask you about something that was in the news recently. So recently it's been reported that carbon dioxide has reached a concentration of 400 parts per million in our atmosphere. Can you explain what that means?
That is frightening. That's the short answer. So essentially, ice core samples can take us as far back as 800,000 years, and sort of tiny air bubbles captured in ice let us know that the carbon concentrations in the Earth's atmosphere, so ppm, parts per million, range between, I think, roughly 180 to 300. Where we're at now is 400 parts per million. And according to some studies, I mean, some say on the low end, 3 million years. On the high end, I've seen 15 million years. That's how far back you have to go to see those concentrations in Earth's atmosphere. So we, humanity, in the course of a few generations, have changed the basic chemistry of our planet, and the fallout is immense. We're talking all sorts of loss of species, and we won't be, you know, we will be affected by that. We're not disconnected from, I mean, this is the food that we grow, right? I mean, a lot of regions are experiencing drought already right now, and that leads to famine, that leads to mass migration. Millions and millions of humans will have to settle in different areas, and then you've got, it could be ethnic groups that might not traditionally get along well, now having to move together. And, you know, I think it's the Department of Defense in the U.S. is saying, you know, this is going to lead to armed conflict. So the fallout is immense. We really need to slow the amount of CO2 that we're emitting into the Earth's atmosphere. And then even, I don't know, it could be that there are some innovations that might draw some of that CO2 out. But the warning labels, it's the impetus. It's the, you know, solutions already now do exist. And there's some that are on their way, say with renewable energy and all sorts of things, always getting better and better. But we just need that will to sort of get there. We need an impetus. And the warning labels ultimately are sort of a mirror, a sort of, okay, let's take honest stock of where we're at today, sort of reflects our behavior. And I think much like any problem, only after you've honestly acknowledged it and, you know, to the extent that you're responsible, take ownership over that, will you then move forward in meaningful ways. So I think it's critical to get these on pumps and to get them on quick.
Well, I'll have my eyes on the pumps. Thanks for talking to me, Rob Shirky. I'm speaking with Rob Shirky, who's the executive director of Our Horizon, the climate change NGO. Kevin Sexton, Radio Humber News.